Is one's mood of commitment and it's a whole different story. Whole different story. Even the way we enter Grihastha life is completely different than entering mundane family life. Completely different. But that's a different, I've got a whole 15-hour course on that, so we'll keep that for another time. But just to share this with you. And this might be one reason why some people are a little afraid, oh, I don't want to become a Grihastha. You know, because we actually have got such good examples everywhere, you know, where one's family life is actually an ashram. Because that conditioning of Grihamedi life, that propaganda of Grihamedi is so strong around us. We come from Grihamedi backgrounds, that's all we know basically. And to actually make our family life an ashram, not such a cheap thing. Not such a cheap thing. Already if there's a big, you know, TV in the lounge room, well, that's got no room in an ashram. I'm sorry, you know, we don't have that in the Brahmachari ashram or in the Brahmachrini ashram. So already then, okay, there's some other element there, you know, which belongs to a different kind of family life, actually. You know. Yeah, so it's a whole, we have to transform internally. It's not just an external thing. You know, and I mean, one devotee was once saying to me, probably Grihamedi life even has more, you know, pious rules and regulations than what we know. So, you know, one devotee was saying, actually, I don't even think we are in the level of Grihamedi life. Even in Grihamedi life, there's probably no divorce. I haven't really researched what are the criteria of Grihamedi life, but it is part of the Vedic culture, and in Vedic culture there's no divorce. So we can say even our high divorce rate shows that we are not even in the level of Grihamedi life. Wow. Whew. So I hope nobody gets offended by me saying this. But I like to be a little, you know, shake people up a little bit and make them think a little bit. Yes. All right, so, I mean, you know, understanding that, it just makes it clear how important it is to be, you know, stably situated in one's ashram. Yes, and for most of us, for some period of our life, the Grihastha ashram is pretty important. And then, by the way, there's another ashram coming, the Vanaprastha ashram. We never even talk about that. There's no education about it. It's not established. I've got a whole 15-hour course on that also. So, there's many things to turn and discuss. You know? Yes. Okay, so, yes. Yeah, we can say, you know, these two, the willingness to sacrifice oneself and being stably situated in one's ashram, they're actually, you know, the main and foremost one. And then, of course, the next important one is demonstrate a good standard of sadhana etiquette, behavior, and commitment to serving Prabhupada. But as we were saying, this kind of develops more naturally if that burning desire is there to actually reach out and uplift devotees. So let me see, is there any questions about this so far before we move on? Okay. Yes? Hang on, what was that last bit with the Grihastha?
In Grihastha, in the ashram, right?
Inside. Yeah, sorry.
So hang on.
In this situation.
Is your question related now to the Grihastha ashram, or is the question related to not being open to the advice of the counselor?
Not being open to the advice of
not be open for grihastha and not be, how I tell you, you have.
So you mean when a person cannot accept the point that he should change ashrams and become a grihastha?
No. Person is already in the grihastha ashram.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And? And he's simply not open to the advice of the mentor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe not have mentor and maybe this, but these things.
And maybe not have even a mentor.
Not yet.
Huh? Not yet. Okay. Well, that's why we are conducting this seminar, you know, to convince people about the importance of having a mentor.
But how you convince somebody, and how is, if somebody bring up the lection, is somebody think, oh, everything is okay with me?
Well, I mean, see, we can only bring the horse to the water, but we can't make it drink.
Okay,
you know?
Okay, thank you, yeah.
So that's the general principle in preaching. Yeah. So we can only try our best to preach and to advise and, but if the person just is not willing, oh, well, then what can we do? No? We can't force. And that's also an expertise a mentor has to have, to understand how much can he give which the person can accept and digest, you know? And maybe you were not there, I don't know. But we were saying it very much depends on the trust that person has in us. And I was sharing that even Diksha Gurus often would love to give their disciples some instruction, but they see the disciple is not ready to accept and therefore he can't give it. Because he doesn't want to put the disciple in a situation where he disobeys his orders. You know? So under similar principles they are also on the lower level of mentorship, you know, that we have to understand if that person is not accepting our advice, then it means we haven't earned that trust yet. We have not earned. Right? You understand? Yes. Yes. So we have not earned their trust. So obviously we have to first establish a trusting relationship, and that's not cheap, you know. It also has to be earned. We actually have to be trustworthy. You know, so we can't just blame the younger devotee, oh, he's not accepting, he's not trusting me. Oh, well, maybe, you know, Vaishnav mood is always to look, well, how am I contributing to the situation? You know, what's my part in this, that things are the way it is, rather than just blaming the other person. So, yes. You know, that's the Vaishnav mood, and especially as a superior person, we actually, we kind of control the relationships to a big amount of, big part, you know. We are the ones who are meant to regulate the relationship. So then we obviously have to see, you know, we have to be flexible. We can't just one formula fits everybody and we just tell everybody what they have to do or something. So we have to see where we have to pick up a person on what level and which is the next step to bring him further, you know. So we have to be personal, we have to be flexible, and we have to have that well-wishing mood of really wanting to serve him and uplift him rather than just, you know, dominating and telling him what to do or something. So, yeah, not easy. It requires that one is, that one's false ego is a little subdued, you know. So that's why this whole giving and accepting shelter is a whole churning process also for the shelter giver, because he has to come up to the mark. He has to see or where he's got some subtle inappropriate attitudes or something, you know. Right? Yes. Another thing is also where we have to be very careful, because we were discussing the importance of respect, you know, that respect is such an important quality in order to be eager for shelter. So, and we were discussing the the tendency for over-familiarity in these modern days, that we try to create intimacy by throwing out the respect, but what we create is over-familiarity. So this is a very common misunderstanding these days, that a senior person, just in case, in order to create this intimacy, they, you know, they put themselves on a same level like the junior person, just to be chummy and close and buddy buddies and friends, right? You understand? And that misconception is there that will make a trusting relationship, but that's a misunderstanding. Yes, this even happens these days in schools and also from parents to children. You know, that's this new fashion that the parents tell the child, oh, just call me by my first name. Don't call me mama or whatever, but just the first name. Oh, we all equals, we are buddy buddies and friends, and it's all cool. And you know, but this is such nonsense. No, there has to be that respectful attitude towards the seniors. Otherwise, how can we learn from that person? You know? So a senior does not do a favor to the young devotee by putting himself on that same platform of equality. Misconception, misunderstanding. It happens a lot. But if we do that, then very easily the junior person will, they will lose respect and you know, they will take us lightly and cheaply and for granted, and they will start correcting us and all these kind of things, which is against the etiquette. A junior person is never meant to correct a senior person. Because otherwise, very easily, a junior person develops that fault-finding mentality. Otherwise, very easily, the junior person starts, you know, seeing faults in the seniors. But how can a junior person understand the mentality of a senior person? He cannot. He is in a different level of consciousness. He cannot understand. So that's why this etiquette is meant to protect us from this apparat, you know, of finding faults. And I mean, God, we are all very good at that, you know, judging and finding faults in seniors, even in GUs and GBCs. And this is terrible. This is terrible, you know. We know this is the main apparat, Vaishnava apparat, you know. So, you know. Yeah, so senior person is regulating the relationship. So a senior person has to learn, you know, to maintain that distance and that, you know, help the young devotee to maintain a respectful attitude, but at the same time being very affectionate and caring and uplifting. Right? Yes. We cannot think that we win a person's trust by putting ourselves on the equal level of the junior. That's terrible, you know? Yeah, because this over-familiarity ruins any relationship. Anybody who is married knows this. Husband and wife is so close, so intimate, you know each other so well, and the physical, you know, relationship also easily leads to over-familiarity and loss of respect. And often we treat our spouse as we would never treat any other devotee. You know, but, oh, it's just my husband, oh, it's just my wife. You know, we have this over-familiarity, and that's very detrimental. You know, that's why even in marriage it's good to cultivate that respect. And I know in Russian and Ukraine, many couples, they call each other by the respectful you, husband and wife. Yes, just to maintain that respectful mood, because true intimacy has to be based on respect. Otherwise, we use each other in a subtle way for our own gratification and all that. So true intimacy has to be based on respect. And that's the same thing in the counselor, you know, mentor-mentee relationship. There has to be that respectful attitude. Right? Another question that often comes up is from the junior side, what to do if the senior is not really willing to give shelter to us? But we want to take shelter of that devotee, but he kind of, yeah, more or less refuses or is not willing. So what do we do then from the junior point of view? What's the advice? Anybody can understand? Yes?
We try to serve him.
Very true, yes. We try and serve the person. And if we offer service, it does not have to be necessarily personal service. Usually, you know, we do feel a little uncomfortable accepting personal service. And actually, there is a purport where Prabhupada says we can only accept personal service if we also offer some upliftment in return. Otherwise, we are cheating if we just accept personal service, but we are not offering any instruction and upliftment. So, but, you know, serving that person in his service or whatever. So, yes, by offering service, that makes a person obliged to give something in return, you know. So if we actually serve that person and inquire from that person, then gradually, you know, that person will also usually reciprocate. But as a junior person, we can't just be in the demanding mood saying, oh, well, I want shelter of that person, but that person is not willing and it doesn't give me any time and attention. And well, you know, no, we actually have to serve. And then that person will maybe, you know, give us some attention and show some interest in our spiritual life. Yes. Okay, so let us quickly have a look here on the fourth session, the last few points. A caregiver has to have sheltering and confidential relationships with equals and seniors. So already at the very beginning yesterday morning, we were establishing that this is really the main and foremost qualification, that we can only give shelter if we are sheltered ourselves. So we have to have a mentor. We have to have a mentor ourselves, such a trust and confidential relationship, in order to be able to give shelter. But that's not enough. One actually should have, you know, as much of senior or equal association as possible, because maybe you remember in the session with Envy, we were emphasizing how important this equal association is and how the equal association brings the most pinching envy from the most secret corners of our heart to the surface. So equal association, very, very important. We will discuss this more tonight when we talk about how to actually practically start the whole thing so that it develops in a healthy and balanced and organic way, a kind of a more, you know, systematic support there for developing the sheltering relationships. But the equal association is just so important. And as we remember, Radha Swami gives this formula of 60% equal association. So a shelter giver has to have, you know, let me just finish a few things and then we'll see. Has to have as much as possible equal association and relationships. Otherwise, if this is not there, then very easily a mentor can become possessive over his people. You know, they are mine and so on. And in order to avoid that possessiveness, a mentor should have a lot of association with other mentors, you know, who are also influential, and where there is some team spirit developed that, yes, let us do something for our devotees and our yatra. We want to serve and reach out and uplift them and so on. So there has to be a good team spirit amongst the mentors to avoid that we just become some independent leaders with our group and our followers or something, you know. Yes. And another one, the next one, is a caregiver has to regularly recharge his or her spiritual strength. Which means, you know, we should take time out for seclusion, extra reading and chanting, senior association, retreats, parikrama, and. Very often this is a trap, not only for caregivers but also for managers, that we think, oh, we are so busy, our service is so important, how can the temple function without us? And we don't recharge. And then our spiritual life gets imbalanced, you know. Yes. So let me ask you, what can happen in a practical way when a mentor does not recharge regularly? Burnout, yes. Burnout. What else? Yeah, we can lose our faith, we can lose our spiritual strength. Actually, you know, our advancement will be choked. We will become stagnant. Right? And there will be so many attachments coming, you know, attachments to power, position, title, money, control, and. Because as we become more senior, either as a manager or as a caregiver, well, naturally there will be some little opulences coming along. We will be more known and this and that. So, and if we don't recharge and nourish our own spiritual life, then we will just become attached to all these things. And we easily water the weeds. And, you know, we will not have that experience that devotional life leads to detachment. Yeah? So that detachment can only really manifest as we also nourish our own spiritual life. Right? Yeah, and of course, as a result of that, so many conflicts come up between the seniors, between mentors or managers, conflicts, disturbances, and also lack of caring spirit. A person who is mainly concerned about their own attachments and position and opulences can't really be a true caregiver. He's just too preoccupied with that, you know. And there is, I mentioned it on your sheet here, but we don't have the time now to go into it more deeply. But there is a purport in 4966 where people say, where Prabhupada says, people who follow their personal ambitions or who are absorbed in their own situations can't be actually true, well-wishing caregivers, actually. They can't be really concerned about other people's welfare. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, and again, in order to get this balance right, that we do take time out and we nourish our own spiritual life, well, that's another reason why we all do need a mentor. Because as we were saying in the very beginning, as long as we have some material desires, some attachments, we can't objectively assess ourselves. We can't really see whether our practice is really so balanced and healthy and everything, or whether we maybe go a little bit off track. And we were saying, very commonly, this unfortunately has been happening, that senior and wonderful and serious devotees, because they don't have such mentoring, sheltering relationships, their spiritual practice is imbalanced, and others might be able to see it But because there's nobody there who really has that close relationship, nobody can tell him anything. It's just nobody there who has that close enough relationship. Because that's always the thing, when we are facing some challenge, some crisis, then if these sheltering relationships have not been established and cultivated before, then in that crisis, it's too difficult for the false ego to just turn to somebody and ask for advice, because then we will think, oh, what will he think about me? And oh, and probably everybody will know it, and how can I share this? And, you know, so then it's too late. That's why we have to cultivate them ongoingly. But if a person doesn't even have not a single relationship like that, maybe even not with his guru, you know, often even the guru can't tell, as, you know, we were saying, Nirvanaswami was saying, sharing. So then, I mean, you know, then who can tell him? And all we can do is watch the person going over the cliff, you know. And it's sad, it's painful, can be avoided. Yes. So that's why it is so important, you know, that caregivers, they have to be firmly sheltered and they have to have a lot of equal association as much as possible. They have to be eager for it and they have to be nourished regularly so they can give something, because we can only give Krishna to others as much as we have Krishna ourselves. So if we don't get our regular nourishment, then you know, the batteries go flat, you know, and we're just working on the mode of passion there, you know. Yes. So are there any questions just about this now? Yes.
I had a question connected to this relationships between senior and junior and equals. I would like to ask you, what kind of relationship is between men, a husband and wife? Is it equal or?
Well, it's a bit of a different seminar, and here you will find the answer. But just to give the answer in one word, no, the husband is meant to be superior, otherwise he can't protect his wife. In order to protect somebody, he has to be superior. And also in order for the wife to play that role of being the auspicious source of energy and the power of inspiration, she has to be in a subordinate position. Only then she can give her power, her energy to him. You know, and she's meant to make him the hero. Most men need this to be motivated. You will find out in the book something which we don't so deeply understand. That's the reason why we women should take a subordinate position. Not because we're dumb and useless and stupid. No, because we are meant to be the power of inspiration to the men on all levels, not only in marriage. That's the reason. And we can be that power of inspiration only if we take this subordinate position. So, and for a woman, it will be more easier to play that role if the husband is superior in all regards, actually. Then it works nicely and naturally. But again, it's a different course. Okay. I want to maybe touch upon one thing. What often puts off senior devotees, you know, of this thought of being a mentor, that very often we think mentors are just running around solving people's problems. And I mean, oh, how long can you do that, you know, just running around solving people's problems? No, actually a good mentor will empower his mentee to solve his own problems. You know? And because we cultivate the mood of taking guidance before we make decisions, not after, So many problems can be avoided. So, you know, the whole mentoring relationship is a more proactive one. That by acting as a mentor, we avoid that devotees, you know, create all these miseries in their lives by taking guidance, you know. But unfortunately, we are in the habit of thinking we can work it all out ourselves. And then just as a formality, oh, please give me your blessings. I want to do this and this. What's that? You know, we only get the cheating version of blessings. You know, Gaurav Vindamaj talks about that. And Sadhu has the mercy version and the cheating version. Not that sadhus cheat, but we get the cheating version by not even asking properly, you know, for guidance and before we make decisions, and we are ready to accept. But if we just make our own decisions and then just ask for the blessings, then we get the cheating version. And I was sharing this situation with this Mataji who wanted to live in Vrindavan, right? I think I did, right? Yes. Yes. So in any case, let's be clear in this, that the mentor is not just running around solving people's problems, but he's meant to guide and inspire, and you know, when a person has a problem and doesn't know what to make, what decision to make, the mentor is not just telling him, oh, do this, you know, or I think you should do that. No, mentor's function is that he helps the person to see things from all different angles, you know, and then let him make his own decision, because he has to take responsibility. Otherwise, the mentor is blamed forever. Oh, my mentor told me. You know, many people want these solutions. They come and want to just be fed with solutions, so they don't have to think and they don't have to take responsibility for their life. So a good mentor will never just give the ready-made solutions, because that teaches people to be irresponsible and not to think for themselves and not take responsibility for their life, because they have to go through the effects of their decisions. So they have to take the responsibility for things. It has to be their decision. So a mentor can only say, and Krishna is doing the same with us. You know, he says, so if you do like this, you will get this result. If you do like that, you'd get that result. And this thing is there, and that thing is there. And so now you work it out. And if you can't do this, you do that. And if you can't do that, you do this. So, and now you make your own decision. You work it out. Right? So, and the mentor acts in a similar way. And all right, some situations, maybe he has to get a bit more involved or something. But as a rule, the mood of a mentor is to empower the person to make their own right decisions. And just give some help, some guidance. And then things happen nicely, and we avoid making so many mistakes. That's what it's all about. Right? Yeah, pretty important, because sometimes when senior devotees hear, oh, me being mentor, oh, forget it, you know. No, I don't want to be swamped with people's problems and then I have to run around and solve them all. And, you know, I mean, how long can you do that, you know? So that's not the idea of mentorship. Just to make that clear. Also, another thing is, which we can also, I do want to keep a few really important things for this evening, but another thing is that after discussing the whole list here of necessary qualifications, we might be feeling, oh, well, who is qualified to do this? Nobody. Or, you know, the point that one has to be stably situated in one's ashram. I definitely don't want that, you know, some senior ladies feel now, oh, well, I'm not situated properly, so that means I cannot care for anybody. And No, I mean, this care and reaching out to people, that should be going on informally anyway, hopefully. That just because one cannot accept the role of mentor and carry that rubber stamp of mentor on one's forehead, it doesn't mean, you know, now one doesn't give a damn about anybody else or something. You know? So one can still cultivate this mood of simply being mindful of other people around us and simply think, where is somebody who I can give something to? It's actually a certain mindset. It's, you know, it's similarly like a mother has this expanded consciousness towards her children, that she's always conscious of the well-being of her children, right? She doesn't, a good mother thinks like this. She's not just concerned about herself, but she, you know, her consciousness is extended and she always, you know, is aware and very mindful and immediately picks up, oh, this one is getting sick here and that one is, looks a little sad and, you know. So in the same way, a devotee should actually try and cultivate this mood. Depending on one's capacity, you know, one might only be able to have this mood towards a few people or then towards a bigger circle of people, that we are simply mindful and we are always eager to, you know, offer somehow some encouragement to somebody, even if we are not such a senior and exemplary devotee and we can be a mentor. No harm to develop that mood anyway, right? So, you know, even though we might not fit fully in that category, you know, we can still have a little Mataji's program and encourage people or something. No harm. It doesn't mean that, oh, this all has to be cancelled now or something. But then as that person who is conducting things, we also have to be a little honest and introspective and not overstep our capacity. Right? So that as soon as there's some more touchy topics coming up, then our position would be to say, oh, listen, I'm actually not really so qualified and maybe you better ask this person, you know? Or, put it that way, you know, if we are not properly qualified as a mentor, we should encourage others to have a mentor, one who is qualified and authorized. But it doesn't mean that we can't have any supportive relationships with younger devotees or something, right? You get my point? We simply have to understand our capacity. And if we're a little humble, then we do understand our capacity. And we understand, okay, because I'm not really fully firmly established in one of the ashrams, my capacity to give shelter is a little limited. I'm a little handicapped or something. It's not fully manifesting at this point because I'm not properly situated. But then we should work out, you know, which ashram do we want to go towards, you know, so that we can be properly situated and then we have more solid ground under our feet and then we can eventually become a more capable and powerful shelter giver, you know. So that mood should be there. So it doesn't mean that anybody who's not fitting in this whole list and anybody who's not an authorized mentor cannot have a caring mood to juniors and establish affectionate relationships and uplift them and all that. Right? But it should make us aware of our own situation and that we don't take up more than we can carry, you know? Because that can be very confusing if young and incompetent devotees or young girl and more or less competent devotees, you know, accept this role of being a mentor and trying to solve intricate problems. And then a younger devotee gets the wrong advice. You know? And that is confusing and bewildering, so we want to try and avoid that, you know? And also, if that person should have a mentor themselves anyway, so then he or she should also double check with one's own mentor, or what advice would you give in this situation, or maybe you better talk to that person or something. Because after all, you know, that person is my mentor, so if somebody asks me for advice, it's almost the etiquette to say, oh, you better go to my mentor. You know, it's almost like a similar thing in regards to guru, that a disciple should, you know, bring other devotees who want to take shelter of him, that they should direct them towards his guru, you know. Which doesn't mean that you push them to become a disciple of my guru or something. But no, that's simply the etiquette to cultivate this mood that I'm not qualified and there's a more senior person. As I was saying yesterday, an important etiquette is that we should not be so keen to speak or sing in the presence of a senior devotee. So in the same way, we shouldn't be so keen to give some grandiose advice if there's somebody more senior who can maybe give a better advice or something, right? You understand what I'm trying to say? Yes? Okay. So it's a bit of a gray zone there, you know, to still cultivate a caring mood, but understanding one's own position that one is not properly qualified to, on deeper levels, act as a mentor or caregiver. But one can still offer some little care, you know. Yeah. Do we have any questions, any points about that? Yes, Bhuvan?
Regarding to the association with the equals, seniors and youth, is there regards about the age or how long he's in the process?
How do we see senior equals juniors?
Yes, is
it sounds like you were not there in the session when we discussed it, because we did mention that the main and foremost criteria is one's Krishna consciousness, but because we can't so easily measure that, especially as a junior one, that's why there's so many more external and somewhat material criteria, like how many years has one been in Krishna consciousness? When did one get initiated? And the mere age is also some factor, that if somebody is 20 years older, naturally, you know, he's senior in one sense. Or a managerial role, if somebody is a temple president or whatever. So even if he might not be a Prabhupada disciple, but still a Prabhupada disciple, will respect him as senior because he has that position. And then also ashram, renounced orders, always superior to grihastha ashram. Sannyas is always superior to grihastha, even though the sannyasi might be not a Prabhupada disciple and the grihastha is or something. But of course, the sannyasi will also take the humble position and say, oh, you're a Prabhupada disciple. You know, so there's all these criteria there. Yes. Anything else? Okay, so the question is, as we progress, we might have different needs after some time. Some other person might inspire us more, we feel more sheltered there, and whether it's appropriate to move on and take then that shelter of that person. Yeah, definitely it's appropriate, definitely. That's how it actually functions, that's how it works, that Krishna sends us the right time, the right person to take us further. So in the beginning, our needs might be different, and then as we develop our Krishna consciousness and also maybe a certain mood, how we want to serve Prabhupada's mission, and so then somebody else might be there who we feel more sheltered by and who we get more, you know, the advice and guidance which we need. I mean, that principle is even there in regards to guru, that it's not necessarily that the Diksha guru has to be the main and foremost person for our whole spiritual practice. Yes. So it's not an offense that, you know, after we have maybe accepted the discipline and training of our Diksha guru for, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, so if we then realize actually there is another person who, you know, now inspires me more, you know, it's not an offense to then actually accept more guidance of that Diksha person. But the etiquette is there that we do have to ask the Diksha guru for permission. That's even there in any more, you know, shiksha relationship with more commitment. You know, even though we see our Diksha guru still as the main source of inspiration, but if there is another person who we take more ongoingly guidance in a more serious way, we should ask for permission. We should ask for permission. So, and then, you know, that gratitude should always be there to what that other person, the previous person, has given us. And any guru or mentor will be more than happy to give permission for that person to move on, because he's not in that mood, or the source of inspiration has to come from me only. No, he simply wants his disciple to make advancement and go on towards Krishna. So he doesn't mind where the inspiration comes from. As long as the disciple moves forward and, you know, yes. So if he does not have that feeling, well, then there's some kind of possessiveness there or something, you know. So, yes. But also let's be clear on this, that a mentor, we should not equal it with Shiksha Guru or something. Actually, they emphasize this a lot in Chaupati, that a mentor, they have some term, but I can't remember exactly how they call the mentor. Anybody here knows? Huh? No, some other one. It's a combination of terms. Some loving, confidential servant, friend, or whatever. I can't remember. You know, it's some combination, some description. Yes, because simply, you know, when we start thinking, oh, I'm now the Shiksha guru for this person and so, and then very easily, you know, the mentor gets a little intoxicated and so on, and well, because there's the instruction, Shiksha and Diksha guru should be respected equally, and, you know, we can get a little carried away. So, and also the mentor relationship, it is an ongoing, you know, more daily, on a more daily level relationship, whereas Shiksha relationships, you know, they usually are a little more remote, and a mentoring relationship is a little more practically involved, even if the person is in hospital. So then, of course, it's the mentor's job to make sure he gets prasadam and this and that. But a Shiksha guru would not necessarily fly in there to make sure he gets prasadam or something. You know, so the mentor is more on a more practical level also, and a regular ongoing level. That's why, and maybe we finish on that note and continue on the same note tonight, that's why, especially with mentors, it's extremely important that we follow the proper etiquette between man and woman. That women accept women mentors and men accept men mentors. A man cannot be a mentor for a woman. Let's be clear on this. Yes. Has to be strongly emphasized, because also, again, you will read this in this book, it is built into the male nature that a man wants to give shelter to a woman. It's built in. Otherwise, how would we women get the shelter of the man if a man would not have that desire? You know, it gives his life some heroic mission to protect a woman and take care of her and so on, you know, and provide for her and all that. It's all, Krishna is just so clever. He builds in all the right qualities and natures into the man's body and woman's body, just so everything goes on properly, you know. Yes, yes, because, you know, it's so important for women to be sheltered. So how would they get the shelter if the man would not want to play that role? So, and therefore, because it's so much built into the man's nature of wanting to give shelter, so even if he has a wife and he gives shelter to her, so for most men it's an appealing thought to give shelter to a few more women there. You know? Yeah, so that's why a man can never be a mentor for a woman. That's a big no-no. That's a big no-no. Whereas a shiksha guru, you know, where there's not such a constant, ongoing relationship, he could give some guidance and inspiration. If he's very sober and cautious and, you know, I mean, we have so many diksha gurus, sannyasis, who have women disciples. So they take a conscious risk for the sake of preaching, you know, that they accept women disciples. And in the same way, if a shiksha person is more qualified and very strongly situated, all right, and if, you know, his guru and mentor confirm that he is qualified to also give some guidance, you know, then there can be some shiksha relationship. But it has to be, you know, one has to constantly check that we don't enjoy in this relationship. This is very subtle, you know, very subtle. One has to be very introspective and perceptive and honest that we don't fall into this trap of enjoying somehow the association and company of the other gender, then poof, everything is already contaminated. So the more a person, you know, can be on that level, then, you know, for a shiksha guru type person, there can be some, you know, some allowance to give some inspiration to others. And I mean, we have so many preachers coming through, and of course there, you know, there's women in the class and they might go for darshan and get some advice or something. So, but then usually, you know, the relationship should not be ongoing every week over Skype. So how are you and this and that. So then obviously it's already going somewhere else here, you know. So, but there has to be some detachment and so on, you know, and no interest in some more emotional thing there or something, you know. Yeah. So mentoring relationship is on a more regular, ongoing level, and so important to be strict in the etiquette. Oh, we've had it all, you know. No need to repeat it. You know, then the mentor walks out with, you know, his mentee, and she leaves her husband. You know, she comes with her marriage problems, and then the solution to the marriage problem is that he marries her, you know, and she leaves the husband and the kids. You know, so we've had all these kind of things, so no need to repeat the same mistakes. You know? No need. Yes. Yeah, so maybe that's a good point to finish, and then in the evening, we will maybe continue a little bit more on that, just how it is practically meant to happen, and yeah, and how to actually develop the whole system in a proper way, in a balanced and healthy and proper way. Right? Yeah. Shall we leave it at that? 20. 2:09. Okay, well, thank you very much. And we'll meet again at 7 to conclude the whole thing. Srila Prabhupada ki.